From Indian politics to global diplomacy, she has covered it all. The big boss of ANI, India's biggest news agency, Smita Prakash. Welcome to India, Russia and the World.
It just seems such a big term, but thank you. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Smita, you've been hosting podcasts for years now. How does it feel to be on the other side?
Yeah, never comfortable. But I think this little baby is making me feel comfortable.
Aww.
But and so are you. Podcast is just 3.5 years, I think, since I've been doing it. But journalism is something I've been doing for a long, long time.
Forever.
So you know how it is, right? I'm more comfortable asking the questions than answering them. But
Let's try. You run India's biggest news agency. Tell me honestly, how tough is that job?
See, when we started the news agency, there was no private television channel in India. We started with this news agency. We started making reels and, well, not reels the way we know it today, but started making these little news packages for channels abroad, for news channels which were hungry for news from India. So we started with that, and then liberalization happened and media channels opened up, television channels opened up. And so there was this, okay, do it for us then. So we started, sure, why not? So we started catering to news channels which came up in India. And then by the by, everything just happened in life.
Trust in media is slipping worldwide. People are losing faith in legacy media organizations. Do you think that the problem is particularly bad when it comes to the Indian media?
I think it's cyclical. I won't say bad in the sense that value judgment of those kind I stay away from. There are shocks to the Indian media which happen. It happened during the emergency. It happened during the Radia tapes thing. It's happened periodically, and media does course correction. If the model seems broken right now, that is something which should not, I mean, at least media managers should not go into that complacency state that, oh, we are doing the right thing. The audience has to just wake up and realize we are doing the right thing. There is a distrust in media, whether that makes a course correction in newsrooms, I don't know whether it will or not. I just feel that you have to move with the times and you have to course correct if there is loss of faith and you're not seeing it and you're not making the changes. Like, for example, I'm sure you want to ask me this about the debates. Have debates resulted in that anger among people? And I've been saying this for 7-8 years, wherever I go, when people say, "Kyun aise chilla rahe? Why are people shouting at each other?" And I said, if you don't like it, don't watch it. The more you watch, the more they will continue with that model.
Yeah.
Right? So if you don't like it, don't watch it. Watch something else. Then the ratings of that increases. But the point is that people love that gladiator level fights that come on TV. People like it. They watch it. And that's why it continues. Otherwise, it wouldn't. It would have stopped. But it's continuing.
Today, many people see news first on social media. Is it difficult for traditional media houses like yours to cope up with that?
Cope with what? With the news which is on social media?
Yes, because necessarily the news on social media is not broken by a journalist, but by anyone today.
Yeah. So, you know, Runjul, we have firewalls in news organizations, right? You worked for several years in news organizations and you guys have firewalls too. So if your reporter brings in a story, you have a sub-editor who'll check it. So there's a fact checker who'll check it. There's an editor who'll check it. And your reporter on the ground, if he or she has filed a story and you see editorializing at that time, you cut that. Even the people you send on the ground are trained to do that. What happens is that on social media, that's not the case. They reach somewhere and they shoot it and they put it because everybody has a cell phone. So they put it there and they'll, of course, break the story first. A channel doesn't care. They'll use a viral video.
Yeah.
They're doing entire shows on viral video, entire shows on Instagram viral videos.
Yeah.
Not verified. They're showing people dying of heat in Paris, in Italy, and all. Some of them are years old, and they're not even Italy or France. But nobody's checking it.
some video game videos are being passed as war videos.
War videos. It happened during
Operations in the
West Asia and Sindhur.
I think all wars now.
Yes. So that's a fear too. And everybody has succumbed to those kind of things because those viral videos came from sources who you thought were real.
Yeah.
During the Ukraine war, during the West Asia war, during Sindhur.
Yeah.
All three wars which we have seen in the past couple of years, it's happened.
In fact, influencers are now reporting news on social media. They have no journalism degree. They have no newsroom experience. Do you think they should be doing what they're doing?
The scariest thing is the influencers on the finfluencers. People have lost their entire saving on these finfluencers who tell you to invest in a certain stock and not. And they get paid, of course, for doing that.
Yeah.
And they're putting it out there, right? Those influencers are the dangerous guys. And there are lots of videos that people are putting out that watch out. But it's a losing battle. It's just
terrifying. You know, honestly, people today are ready to believe these influencers than journalists. That's also our fault, isn't it?
It is our fault in the sense that some of us are not putting it out there that this is very dangerous. So for every journalist, for everybody who has a voice, I keep saying that, begin with your small circle.
Smita, wherever the Indian Prime Minister travels, ANI travels. Foreign trips, domestic trips. Tell me, who do you think has been the easiest Prime Minister to work with and who's been the toughest?
If I was to go back in history, even before ANI became ANI, we were covering from Jawaharlal Nehru's time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so the Films Division documentaries, which your parents must have seen in theatres before a film started, they used to be the Films Division documentaries. Mm-hmm. Those were about... See, she wants to shake hands with me. That's okay. So they used to run Films Division documentaries and about public sector undertakings, which were started by Nehru and the Bharat Petroleum, Indian Oil or whatever, HAL. So when those things used to run, those were covered by ANI for Films Division.
Uh-huh.
So we've been covering Indian Prime Minister since then. Okay, so no Prime Minister who we have not covered. So it's nothing new that is happening now or in the past. Who's been the most media friendly? I'm told that Nehru was very media friendly. Indira Gandhi had her favorites and only with them she would be friendly. Morarji Desai was certainly not media friendly. Charan Singh had his favorites. Chandrasekhar was one of the most friendly. He did not pick and choose. VP Singh was suspicious of the media. Vajpayee Ji had his favorites. Dr. Manmohan Singh, I don't think he has favorite anybody. I mean, he did. He was a very private person, but such a sweet, kind person to talk to, interact with. Dr. Manmohan Singh would speak to the media and he had media advisors and, you know, he would take questions. So people who tell me that, you know, he didn't take and it was all tailored and stuff like that. No, there were times when the Prime Minister travels abroad where if it is open to the foreign media, the media managers do try to curate it to some extent. But I think he was pretty good. He didn't do one-on-one interviews. I think maybe one or two he's done, that's all. Mr. Modi has done, I think, over 100. So he's done several. He doesn't do press conferences. Every prime minister has their own way of doing it. But I think prime ministers know that anything that they speak will be used in some way or the other by the journalist.
Mm-hmm.
Either in his or her book 15 years from now, or else it will be used in a report or in background information when they're giving gyan on television.
Okay, that was quite interesting. You had the whole list ready, huh, Smita? Why do you think foreign journalists, many of them, get India so wrong?
Okay.
And they have all the resources to get India right.
So, again, I don't want to say good, bad, right, wrong. What happens, I would just say it's cyclical, because the budgets have shrunk for foreign journalists. There was a time when nobody questioned you. For one story, you could spend a lot of money, take a cameraman, a soundman, all that shrunk. In the 90s, India was not the story.
Mm-hmm.
Internationally, the budgets shrunk. There was the Gulf War happening, the first Gulf War. All those things happened. Budgets shrunk. Asia was not important.
Okay. Is it today?
So now if I was to jump today and see why they get it wrong, today it has shrunk so much. So for foreign media, they are on shoestring budgets. So unless you travel on the ground and cover it, you're not covering news.
How do you think India's economic growth story gets covered in international press? I do want to show you this. A trip to India left me with 38 parasites in my brain. And it was first the BBC and then the rest of the UK media. Just pounced on it. What is this? Ticks for clicks?
Could be. That's a good one. It could be. It could be that it's a personal anecdote, and to paint the entire country with a parasite bone trip. Okay. But theek hai, it's your experience about India. Sad that it happened like that. Like I said to you, Runchun, there are layers and layers within this country. If you're going to just base your perception of India on just say what's happening in Jantar Mantar, just go cover that. Everybody in India, every youth in this country is frustrated, angry with the system, and India is ripe for revolution. If you were to stand in Jantar Mantar today, that's what you will think.
Yeah.
But if you were to go to Hyderabad, if you were to go to Chennai, if you were to go to Bangalore, you will see the youth involved in so much, from working in data centers, working on science and technology, working on chips. So you're going to be talking about various things which are happening in technology, various aspects of Indian economy, which is booming. But you don't want to see that manufacturing sector. You don't want to see that there is a growth story. You want to only see that India is ripe for revolution because the youth are disaffected, because cheating is happening during the medical entrance exam. Of course it is. Of course that part of India exists. Dowry deaths are happening. Men are facing death during their honeymoons and stuff like that. That is also happening. We are several billion of us. We are, you know, I don't know when you're going to be airing this, but there will be a million of us more by the time you air it. So there are several stories which are happening simultaneously in this country. So if you see the Western media reporting India in a certain way, keep your antenna up, right? And look at it, because India aspires to be a rising power. We are no longer shy about it. When I began my career 36 years ago, we were shy about it. We were embarrassed about it. We still looked at ourselves as a third world country, because we were told again and again that we are a third world country. Today, I don't see Indians apologetic about wanting to be a growing power, mm-hmm. right? So everybody in the world feels threatened by a country that wants to be a growing power. Everybody. The ones at the top don't like it. They want to be a G1 or a G2. They might have a G7. They might have a G8. G20 is just to make them look good. That, okay, we have these countries who we are liking. We are so egalitarian. We are so nice. We want these developing countries. We want to hear your story. We want to be part of your economy too. We want to help you. But no, nobody likes a growing India. So if we say, oh, we are so alone, nobody likes us, grow up. You are not in the business of getting people to like you. You're in the business of becoming successful. And if you want to become successful, people are not going to like you, which is fine. Get there, become successful, and then be the nice person. I know I'm sounding like a bee with an itch, but
of course you're not. Of course. And all facts. In 2024, US officials urged India to block RT, Russia Today. Do you not think that undermines West's own argument of press freedom?
India and Russia have had very long, strong ties. A default mechanism is to trust the Russians. A default mechanism is to trust Russia Today. I'm not saying that just because I'm on your channel, but I'm saying that as an Indian who grew up in socialist India. So these are our trusted friends. As far as the foreign media are concerned, governments have cracked down on foreign media time and time again. It could be the BBC, it could be RT Today, it could be Turkish television, it could be anybody else, or Al Jazeera for that matter. My father used to work for the government of India and has worked as the principal information officer. As a child, I've heard him yelling at foreign media on the phone, yelling and saying, "How dare you do this? Do you not understand this?" And screaming and yelling, and then inviting the guy over for a drink to the house and chatting with him and saying that, "I hope you don't mind." That guy also didn't mind. My dad also, that build bridges, explain the government of India's position, and you know, it was okay. Give them a nice South Indian meal, and
everything will be fine.
Everything will be fine. So the government also has to understand, but there's this, some of them don't like it and they become crotchety. And then there's social media, which convolutes everything, because there are the ultra nationalists who say, "How dare they talk like this? How look, even your own channels talk like this. Even your own media talks like this. You can't just keep cracking down on the media. If the media does everything which is so tailored to suit your algorithm, that same media will not have the freedom to report when governments change. And then what will you do?"
Honestly, would you say India has press freedom?
If you're going to compare it with somebody else or compare it with our past, those are two different things. Look at the way in the West Asia crisis we saw for ourselves. Where are the freedoms there? None of them could put stuff out on social media also. Even when the attacks were happening in those countries, when bombs were falling on their civilian targets, the civilians couldn't post on social media. So where was the freedoms there? Nobody talks about that. You talk about East Asia. Stuff happens there. You think it doesn't, but do you see any kind of reporting there? Nobody talks about that, right? So if I was to compare with these countries, no, we have more freedoms than those countries. Do we have as much as the US? Maybe not. Do we have as much as it's there in Europe? Maybe not. But they're very insulated. Nobody's interested in foreign news. They're only covering their own news and very city-oriented. You never see news coming out about rural America. You never see it on their channels. You look at Europe, you never see so much that happens out there, which we can, but many of us, when we travel out there, koi karta bhi nahi hai. Nobody puts it on social media. You're terrified that you'll never get a Schengen visa again. So nobody does that too. Comparing it to other countries, no. Every country should see what freedoms they need to have. Every journalist needs to have their comfort level of working. Do we have more freedoms today than we did 15 years back, 20 years back, 40 years back? Every government tries to curb freedoms of journalists.
In their own way.
Yes, in their own way. They will try to stop you from doing a story if it doesn't suit the government point of view.
Labels like Godi Media that are coined to describe compromised or captured media, do they bother you?
Sometimes. I mean, I am human, so these things do bother. But then the same people who say Godi Media, they were Mino Media at one point of time. Sonia Gandhi. So Sonia was known as Sonia Mino. So Mino Media or Congress Media, Gandhi Media, whatever. They used to say that too. So they were considered loyalists then. Godi is a very silly word. As somebody who said on my podcast that most of us are overweight, so we don't fit into anybody's Godi. people tell you very early in life that have a skin like a crocodile if you're a journalist, because things will be said to you which will hurt you and all. If you're a sensitive person, then maybe this line is not there for you. Or if you're a sensitive person, curb it. Leave that sensitivity to understand your story better. Go to the hinterlands. Go understand those kind of stories. Use your sensitivity to enhance your profession rather than hurt you.
New Delhi and Moscow have had strong ties, irrespective of the leadership. But would you say that Mr. Modi and Mr. Putin have a rather rare, special bond?
I've seen Dr. Manmohan Singh with Putin as well. There was no discomfort. President Putin is able to probably mask his personal opinion about the other heads of state. I've seen him with the same expression with everybody else, with everybody, every head of state or government. There's no, there's nothing which is different. But with a with Modi, there's, I don't know whether it is Modi who's very effusive or whether it is President Putin, but they have a good, strong vibe, the two of them. Not to say that he didn't have with Shinzo Abe.
Yeah.
Not to say that he didn't have with an Obama. Not to say that he didn't have with Trump in the first tenure. Yeah, not in the second
one. Not in the second one, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So not in that. Even with Nawaz Sharif, I don't know whether you've seen that. It feels really awkward to see them holding hands and walking in Lahore. It was like, oh my God, does he have to be so effusive with a Pakistan prime minister? My thing is that heads of state, heads of government have a certain vibe which percolates. Bureaucracy watches.
Yeah.
And they get signals from that.
True.
So when heads of state are doing this performative action, they are sending signals downward.
Why is the West still so uncomfortable with the India-Russia friendship?
They've always been, right? Uncomfortable with it. They like, why would you be in the Russian camp? It's not as if we wanted to be in one camp. We lean Russia because Russia has been our steadfast partner. We still get our defense supplies from there. It's our energy provider. And the list can go on. I don't want to insult the intelligence of your audience by that. Everybody knows where Russia has stood by India in times of crisis. And we will continue to rely on Russia to be our security provider, our energy provider, and plus, plus, plus. Right? But we also practice strategic autonomy in the sense that we have been non-aligned. We have chosen that. Now it's multi-aligned. The West Asia crisis has shown that even those countries which were solidly in one camp are now rethinking. The Russia-Ukraine war and the West Asia war has created several hegemons now. And every country is rethinking about their security needs. So appreciate it.
India-US trade deal, it's still not come through. And US has tried to use Russia as a reason to bully India on that. But tell me, Smita, what are your sources telling you? Is this trade deal ever going to happen?
America also wants to have a trade deal with us for various reasons, yeah. Right? So each of us is trying to think about that. It's getting stuck on certain issues, agriculture being one of them. It's a sensitive topic, dairy, the other thing. Russia, I don't think so all that much. The noises which come saying don't buy energy. We were told to buy energy from Russia at one point of time. Not that we bought energy from Russia because we were told.
Yeah.
But it was wink, wink. Go ahead, buy it. Right? Because Europe wanted that energy.
Yeah.
We bought wherever we could get our defense supplies from. Understand that we live in an unfriendly zone. We have an enemy to the left. Enemy is a strong word. Enemy to the left, enemy to the right. But I don't hesitate in saying that. We are in a tough neighborhood. We needed that weaponry. If you were not going to sell that weaponry to us, we would buy it from Russia, which is selling it to us on terms of rupee ruble. So India doesn't want dairy here for various reasons.
Yeah.
Amul, right? We don't want, it's a religious thing. It's various things. We don't want GM seeds. We don't want, but we are showing some flexibility. Corn, maybe, yes. Okay, maybe if you bring corn. Chalega yaar. So I think somewhere we'll have to give and take.
So soon or not so soon?
I think it will happen. I mean, it will take time. These are complicated deals, but it will happen, I think, by this year.
Mm-hmm. All right. Lastly, who has been the coolest guest on your show so far? And who are you still waiting for? Who's on your wish list?
So I won't pick a coolest, but I know, so mean, right? Those who make me rethink about what I thought would be, like maybe I had a crush on an actor. And firstly, never interview somebody who you have a crush on. Never interview a superstar.
Uh-huh.
Just don't.
You're weak in the knees, huh?
Feet of clay. I have loved interviewing people who have led an amazing life. top of the line, I thought Haji Mastan was like terrible, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, of course he was. He was an underworld don, but and it was just one of those things which happened. So I interviewed him, and that was fun to do because it made me rethink on many things. And I was like, okay. And it was very early in my career. Loved interviewing IK Gujral. I didn't mention him when I was listing the prime ministers. Very media friendly, and you could ask him anything. Never asked questions. Deve Gowda was very interesting too, and. These are interesting people. Mr. Modi is phenomenal.
Who's on your wish list?
Who's on my wish list? Of course, I would like to interview Rahul Gandhi if he would speak to me. Prime Minister in waiting for several years. I would like that. I've never interviewed Sunil Gavaskar. He was my childhood crush.
Uh-huh.
So, never interviewed him. I've met him.
But childhood crush. So you're not going to interview him, right? By the logic you
But he's such a smart guy. Uh-huh. Like, you know, so I think it will be fun to interview him. I've never interviewed Shah Rukh Khan. He's a bright guy too. So I would like to interview him. So, you know, these are fun people that interview, but I still prefer to report a story than do interviews.
Smita Prakash, it's been lovely to have you here.
Love
Thank
doing
you
this
time.
With you. Thank you so much. Thanks for being here and the opportunity.